Red Business with Jonathan Healy.
Hi there, thanks very much for joining us. Coming up in this episode, we're heading down to Spike Island to see what they've got in store this summer, and we'll speak to the Cork Business Association President Aaron Mansworth. But we're going to begin with a trip to Condonstown near Middleton. Leahy's Open Farm has been in business since 1996. It's a fabulous place to go with your family, or indeed with yourself. And the business is going from animal farm to ice cream to chocolate, and their latest venture is called Leahy's Pod Park. I have no idea what to expect from it, so let's bring in Teresa Leahy of Leahy's Farm. She'll explain all. Teresa, you're very welcome back.
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for having me.
Now, tell me a little bit about the Pod Park, because I'll talk ice cream in a minute because it's a topic close to my heart. But the Pod Park is new. What is it?
Pod Park is new. So what we've done here at the farm is, over the last number of years, we've always, I suppose, had a number of customers ask us, you know, where could they stay locally, and would we allow their camper vans to park in the car park, and would we ever do camping and all the rest of it. And I suppose we would have gone abroad a number of times and came across the pods and all of that. And I suppose it was in our minds to do something along that line, because how cool would it be really to be able to go and visit the open farm and then stay on the farm as well, you know, and avail of going up to the open farm for a couple of times during the day while you're staying in the Pod Park. And it's, I suppose, located around the area down at the end of the car park there, where there's a lovely adjacent forestry as well, Knockacuil Forestry, and there's beautiful walks around there. There's four and a half k walks around, ideal for kids. It's safe out, and you know, it's a quiet, peaceful kind of a place, you know. It's suitable for older people, for kids, for families, for the whole shebang. Now, so they get the whole farm and they get the pods and they stay overnight and have a great time.
People who listen to me in the radio on a regular basis will know that I'm kind of a fan of creature comforts. I don't like, you know, abandoning things like indoor toilets. Like, how are you going to convince me that I should stay in one of your pods?
Jonathan, I have to say I'm kind of the same as you. I'm not a camper. I'm so not one of, you know, I love the idea of being outdoors and all of that, but I do like my own little luxuries as well. So we would have stayed in a few of the pods over the years, and they would have been pods maybe that just had the beds in them. And, you know, maybe in the middle of the night, then the kids had to go to the toilet, and oh, you had to trek across the yard with a flashlight to try and find the toilet in the cold and all the rest of it.
Fear of God into me, I'm even saying it.
No, but it's not like that. We don't have, all of our pods all have kitchenettes and ensuite toilets in them. They have double beds, bunk beds, pull-out sofa beds. There's a little table in there, some chairs, toaster, kettle, microwave, fridges, little induction hob. And then the ensuite has a shower, toilet, hen basin, lovely lit up mirror. It's a little bit of luxury, but you can, I don't know, can you call it camping? It's not really. It's more like a luxury.
Instantly I'm sold on this now. I'm going, no, there's indoor toilets and a kitchenette. It's fabulous.
Yeah.
And it's down beside the woods, so you can go off for a look at the woods, or you can go and look at the lake, or you can indeed just pop up and have a look at the farm.
You can do all of those, Jonathan. There's loads to do, and even bring the bikes, because the lovely greenway down between Middleton and Mogilly opened this summer as well. So even bring the bikes and pop down there. It's only a 5-10 minute drive from the farm, and it's ideal for kids. It's safe out to go cycling as well, you know. So there's loads to do up around the farm as well for the smallies. We're open 10 until 6 every day, so they can come up as often as they want throughout the day. They can stay for the day, they can get their lunch, their dinner, their breakfast, the whole lot if they want. We have small little, say, cartons of milk, and we can do breakfast and deliver it down to the pods and things as well. There's loads of options, you know. We can do barbecues, we can do toasted marshmallows, you know, there's the breakfast baskets, and then like, we have a little, it's a hangout area is what we call it, so it's a little seating area with a fire pit. There's table tennis in there, there's giant Jenga, there's rings to throw, you know. It's just a space, just like kind of 6-7 o'clock, the kids aren't ready to go to bed obviously, sun is shining, leave them off up there for an hour or two, and they'll knock the pip out of them after their long day at the farm, and they'll sleep like
they sleep well in the bunk beds, definitely. Now, you're constantly innovating down there, which is what I love about Leahy's Farm, and I equally love seeing Leahy's Farm out and about in different locations. I mean, you're producing that much ice cream that you need a bigger ice cream facility.
We do. We're in the middle of building. Well, we have it built. It's a new ice cream building dedicated just for ice cream production. I suppose where we're making it at the moment, we're just at our capacity. We really don't have the room to make more and the storage to store more. And it's a kind of a constant weekly, is the freezer empty and it's filled again, it's emptied and it's full again. And we have a lot of small shops, a lot of artisany shops and an awful lot of super value centres, different places that would take our ice cream. But we're kind of slow to kind of look for more business at the minute because we really are at capacity. So we decided 2-3 years ago, I suppose, that really we wanted to develop this side of the business as well, because it has taken off and it's going really, really well. And our ice cream, I know I'm biased, but it is absolutely gorgeous.
It is really good. I mean, I don't know what you're doing down there or how you're getting the milk to taste that good, but it is something special.
It is gorgeous. So yeah, so I suppose we put up an ice cream building. We've some new machinery put in there to make it a little bit more, just more economical, more sustainable for us to run it and to be able to produce the capacity that we want. And that should be up and running, we're hoping, by the end of the summer. And it'll just make making the ice cream a little bit more easier on our part, which then I suppose on the other side of it, it'll free up the space where we were making it already to develop on more of our chocolate production as well. You know, so one is going to definitely complement the other. Space-wise here on the farm as well.
28 years ago, you decided to start the open farm. It was the classic diversification that, you know, maybe there's something else we can do with this wonderful farm that we have, and brought people in for the first time, and then it kept growing and growing and growing. I mean, have you any idea what's next? Because you sound like a family that just, you know, it's always the next big thing that's in your mind, even when you're just after opening the previous big thing.
I know. That's the nature of the business, Jonathan. Like, I suppose myself and Donal are very much that way inclined, that, you know, we've something done, we'll sit on it then for a little while and leave it, you know, leave it kind of sink in and leave it kind of get absorbed onto the farm and make sure it works properly and everything. And then I suppose we just get a little bit of itchy feet. It's like, what can we do next? You know, what's the next big adventure? But I suppose, like, we find from a lot, like, we have a huge amount of our business comes from our memberships, which are families that are coming on a continuous basis. They might come once a month, they might come every couple of weeks, you know, and for them as well. And it's not that they've been asking for something new or wanting something new at the farm, but I suppose the nature of the business that it is, we like to be able to say, this is a new item on the farm, or we've redeveloped an area or put in a new play area or did something a little bit different. And I suppose myself and Donal, thankfully, we're of the same mindset that way, that we do like to be adding to the farm, even if it's only a small little thing, but it just, we're reinventing and reinvesting into the farm all of the time.
Well,
I suppose our customers can see that, you know, which is why we're...
Well, they keep coming back, which is the main thing. I haven't been down there myself this year so far, but I will arrest that over the summer and head down there. And the glamping pods are available. If you want to have a look at them, leahysopenfarm.ie. There's pictures there, and I can see from the website that they're selling fast. So if you want to go down and bring the kids for a unique experience, do head down there. Have the ice cream. You can get it in Marina Market now as well, can't you?
You can. We set up a store there about 2 years ago in Marina Market. It's going really, really well. It's a fabulous space up there. There's loads of food outlets there. Our ice cream is there. We have... we've churros up there, we've our chocolates up there, you can do hot chocolates and all of that. So there's a good offering up in Marina Market the farm produce.
Shudder to think what's going on in your heads as to what might happen next, because it's a brilliant story, and we salute you and all the team down at Leahy's. Leahy's Pod Park, the latest addition to Leahy's Open Farm near Middleton. Teresa Leahy, a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Off we go down to Spike Island now, one of Ireland's leading visitor attractions. And they've launched a new exhibition now called Entwined History, revealing Spike Island's forts. It's to commemorate the 220th anniversary of Fort Westmoreland's foundation. I didn't even know it was called that, but the person who'll tell me all about it is the marketing manager for Spike Island, Michelle Russell. Hi, Michelle. How are you keeping?
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for having me.
I didn't realise that there was a Westmoreland, but obviously he was the fellow who set up Spike Island as we know it now.
It was originally called Fort Westmoreland at its foundation back in the 18th century, and then later became Fort Mitchell, which is, I suppose we call it Fort Mitchell today, Fort Mitchell on Spike Island.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, you go in and out of favour when you're a fellow like that. So you just have to accept the history when it comes along. We know a lot about the history from the famine ships and it being used as a prison throughout the years. The forts really aren't talked about as much.
They're not. And actually, I suppose it's the military history side would be the forts. So every year we have an annual exhibition at Mitchell Hall. And you know, each year it reflects on the heritage, the history and the people of Spike Island. So this year we're delving into that military history and the origins of the forts, And I suppose as well, it's the 220th anniversary of the laying of the foundation of Fort Westmoreland. So another fantastic exhibition this year from our museum curator, Dorota Gubbins, and the heritage team here on the island. It's quite a fascinating one. I mean, I think many people aren't aware that the original fort dates back as far as, the time of the American Revolution and the Napoleonic War. So it was constructed really in response to threats from those conflicts. The significant location of Spike Island within the harbour played a huge part in that, for defence purposes. And after Napoleon's defeat, it remained unfinished actually until the Great Famine, when the island was a convict depot for prisoners. So in actual fact, it was the convicts who completed the works.
Okay, well, the good cheap labor, free labor, one might argue, that helped them finish it on time. I mean, like, the history of it is what draws people there. But when people get off the boat, there is an incredible reaction, isn't there?
There is, and I suppose it's the scale of the island, really. I mean, it's 104 acres, and I suppose when you see it from Cove or even from the air, you don't get the scale of it. And it is 100 acres, 4 acres of just natural beauty, really, with the 1300 years of history on top of it. So I suppose on arrival, we have a guided tour, which everyone is takes part in. And it's with a local guide, really authentic storytelling, which I think is a real kind of USP for us, they do kind of they bring that history to life.
When you're looking at this, the guided tours are one thing, but a part of it is self-guided, isn't it? You can go for the wander around the island. And what's being done to allow people to do that?
So I suppose just to give you an idea, I mean, a visit with us is 3.5 hours. So that includes your boat trip over and your guided tour. But once the guided tour is complete, you are free to self-explore the island, see the exhibition spaces. We have also recently relaunched our revamped augmented reality app, which I suppose is just using cutting-edge technology to further tell the story. It's almost like a digital story trail. Quite immersive, so visitors can download the app prior to their visit. And around the island, there's 15 stops, so they scan those at those locations, and it almost brings the characters into their phone, and just kind of further tells that story.
Well,
So it's almost like another tour guide in your pocket, really.
absolutely, but that's the digital replica. But how many people are coming to the island looking to meet a ghost? Because it is reportedly one of the most haunted places in Cork.
It is, and a lot of people, there is that fascination, I think, with the dark tourism and with the dark history. So, I mean, particularly in the autumn, we do the after dark tours at night, and that kind of delves more into the darker history and those stories of the prisoners and the horrible things that happened there.
Yeah, and of which there were many over the
Yeah.
years. The great tie-up is with Cove, because you obviously can't drive to the island. You have to go across on a ferry, and you leave. I think it's 8 times a day, 7 days a week. You can sail over to the island. So Cove benefits as much as Spike Island does from this increased interest in the history of the island.
Exactly. And we're 8 sailings a day now from July and into August, so it's our busy season. But Cove is such a great town, it's really become that destination town. You've lots to see and do there, not just ourselves, I suppose. You've got the Heritage Centre and the Titanic experience, with it being the ship's last port of call. The cathedral, the deck of cards houses, they're so colourful, you'll see them in every photograph of Cove. It's just a great town, and I suppose the liners coming in as well. I mean, 116 vessels into the harbour this year between Cove and Ringaskiddy. So that's a 23% increase on last year. And great credit has to go to Port of Cork there for the work they do in bringing people into the harbour and into Cove. And I also think Cove is quite accessible from the city as well. You've got the train service that's running every half an hour in peak times. And it's a short train journey. You can hop off at Foto Wildlife, Foto House, and then make your way onto Cove. So I think there's something for everyone. You can really make a day out of it and even visit ourselves at Spike Island as well.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the finest places you can go. And there is a little bit of a festival coming up, the Spike Island Literary Festival, making a return. Crime writing at the heart of all of this. Plenty of criminals pass through, plenty of innocent people as well, of course, but it's an ideal location for us at late August.
Exactly. It's quite a fitting location. So our literary festival is now, and it's going into its third year, running from the 23rd to the 25th of August. So we're welcoming crime authors from Ireland and the UK. The opening event actually will be quite interesting. It's Neil Lancaster and Imran Mahmood. So they both have a background in crime. Neil in the police force and Imran a criminal barrister. That'll make for an interesting conversation, I think. And opening that event is our very own Conal Creighton as well.
So. All right. Well, spikeislandcork.ie is the website if you want to have a look at it. Good luck with the season ahead. Fingers crossed the weather does its part.
Exactly.
Yeah, we have to wait for that. Michelle Russell, Marketing Manager of Spike Island. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Major business organisations across Cork City have come together to urge the government to approve a funding package to enable the development of the Cork Events Centre, a multi-purpose 6,000 capacity venue to hold conferences and concerts and everything else that we've been promised for a long time. On this very podcast a few weeks ago, as he was then, Minister Simon Coveney said, oh yes, definitely coming, it's coming soon. Now he has retired from politics and wish him well, but we still don't have a promise of an event centre. President of the Cork Business Association is Aaron Mann. He's with me now. Aaron, how are you keeping?
Good, Jonathan, and thanks for having me today. Good to be on.
Now, this is a problem, isn't it? Because we've been promised and promised, and it's always just that little bit beyond our reach, but the further it gets, the less likely it is to be built.
Yeah, I suppose, and I suppose there are concerns too, Jonathan, is that like we all know it's 10 years in the process now, and I suppose before I start, I would have to sort of say that the then Minister Simon Coveney and Artie, you know, before she steps down in her role, are two people who really pushed very hard for it, to be fair. And, you know, we'd have to give them their dues. But we are 10 years, you know, 10 years waiting. And unfortunately for us, it's something that, you know, is going to stigmatize the city a little bit. And, you know, we've seen television programs and it's negative, but I suppose that's the negative side. It's for us the bigger concern is the loss of opportunity, you know, that this is causing, because, you know, we've seen a number of people that are stepping away from their roles, that are stepping, you know, into new careers, and, you know, we still don't have it across the line. And from our point of view is, you know, if we are considered the second city, we are the second city, but yet we don't have a space that can do large indoor events, you know, and We see it year in, year out of events that Cork are missing out on, you know, particularly through the wonderful work that Visit Cork and the Cork Convention Bureau do. You know, they're out there selling Cork and they're pushing hard. And, you know, they can bring certain events to Cork, but they're very restricted in terms of size that you can get across the line. And even from a profile piece of the Cork name out there to be associated with some of the high profile acts that come to Dublin, that come, you know, come to UK, that we could be on that circuit. It's disappointing, but I suppose from my own personal point of view, but from speaking from a CBA perspective, you know, there's a lot of businesses that need an event centre that are struggling.
Well, we saw a taste of it during the month of June and a little bit into July as well, when we had the Marquee going at full tilt and we've Motherwell Park going at full tilt, and every single night the city was buzzing because there was so many people around. You're not going to have gigs like that in October, November. But if you've an indoor event centre, then yeah, you will get touring concerts, you'll get touring shows, and all of a sudden the opportunity exists for a rising tide to lift all boats. Yet here we are, Aaron, still talking about something that might or might not happen.
And I suppose it's the uncertainty, Jonathan, and that's the killer, because, like, I suppose, you know, from when the word goes, or if a yes is to happen, you know, it's still 3-4 years in a build. It's 3-4 years. Some of these events book 4 or 5 years out. So, you know, it's for me, you know, the reason I, you know, really want to hear that this is happening, obviously the financial reasons for businesses. And it's not just businesses, because I suppose this is a point that's overlooked, is that it's for people themselves in the locale, because I think sometimes it might be that, well, businesses, it's the same businesses are calling for it because they're greedy, they want this, they want that. But ultimately, if you think about it, exactly like you said, it lifts all boats, raises all boats, because it's not just the businesses, and it's not just the typical businesses of, say, hotels that will benefit. It's every type of business, retail, but also you yourself. The way I a couple of weeks ago, I took my son and two of his friends for his birthday up to a concert in the O2 on a Monday night in Dublin, and between concert tickets, bedrooms and meals and stuff like that, you're probably into €1,000, you know. And you're sort of saying is, how often can you do that? That's a very, very special occasion. Whereas if it's on your doorstep, like we've seen, and correctly, like the marquee is phenomenal. And again, to Peter Aitken and the team, it's a phenomenal event. And as you said, with Independence Park as well, and there's a lot going on there, which is great. We need it year round. But you think about it, Jonathan, is that trip that probably cost me, say, €1,000 to take three teenagers to a concert in Dublin, and it was all above board. In that €1,000, there wasn't any
No, well,
extravagance.
I'm sure you'd have preferred to spend it closer to home if needs be. You probably spent a bit more locally than you would if you had actually gone to Dublin. But the other side of this, Aaron, is the cost of construction is not going down. If anything, it's going up. So the longer there's dithering and delay here, the more likely there is to be jeopardy to the entire project. Have you any idea what the logjam is? What is slowing this down?
We don't, Jonathan, and that's probably the frustrating thing, is because when the question's asked, it seems to be going around the houses. It's got government approval by all accounts. BAM, Live Nation, everybody's on board. And to be fair, again, I have to say City Council are really driving from their side, and Doherty's done a great job on keeping it at the table and driving on. Nobody seems to know. It seems that the funding gap has been bridged. Again, I could be corrected on that, but I suppose it's the lack of clarity around this. And I suppose the worrying thing for us is that a lot of people that own this and that would have really been driving and being able to be held accountable are now gone from the table. So that could be a factor for people as well. Is there as much accountability? So it's worrying for us, John, because as a region, and I can't stress this enough, we need it. It's not a nice to have. We need it. We can see week in, week out closures, particularly in the hospitality sector. I'm here with my CBA hat on, which is cross-sector, and there's a lot of sectors that are struggling, but none more so than hospitality. And when I'm talking particularly bars, restaurants, coffee shops, we've seen a couple of closures again this weekend. And I don't want to be sitting here talking, negatively, because it's important as well. There is positives happening, there are openings as well. But we are seeing businesses struggle. The cost of doing the business this year, absolutely went through the roof. And we see, and I suppose one of the positives that I've seen in the last couple of years is that Cork is beginning to attract international brands, say in the hotel sector. We've seen Premier Inn open this year. We've seen a Moxie about to open this year, which is great for Cork. We want to see Cork continue to grow, more hotels, more, but it needs something to drive this business. It's like Belfast. Belfast is a couple of these, and over a couple of year period, Belfast added 5,000 bedrooms, to their stock.
And look how they're doing, and they've got a fantastic Titanic quarter and everything that's around it. Aaron, it is a mystery worthy of Enid Blyton, and hopefully by asking the question, you and the other businesses involved in coming together to make this plea might actually get your answer. Aaron Manzarek, President of the Cork Business Association. Thanks for joining us, Aaron.
Thanks, Jonathan.
And that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget, Red Business in Focus, with thanks to Cork's local enterprise offices, is available right now on redfm.ie. Marita Kelly was the producer, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Get the Red Business podcast every week with Jonathan Healy at redfm.ie and wherever you get your podcasts.